Chapter 24. And strangely tattooed the surface of their faces, heaven knows how, in their sleep. The coach stopped and went on, and went on and stopped, times out of number. Passengers got up and passengers got down, and fresh horses came and went and came again, with scarcely any interval between each team, as it seemed to those who were dozing, and with a gap of a whole night between everyone, as it seemed to those who were broad awake. At length they began to jolt and rumble over horribly uneven stones, and Mr. Pecksniff, looking out of window, said it was tomorrow morning, and they were there. Very soon afterwards the coach stopped at the office in the city, and the street in which it was situated was already in a bustle that fully bore out Mr. Pecksniff's words about its being morning, though for any signs of day, yet appearing in the sky it might have been midnight. There was a dense fog too, as if it were a city in the clouds, which they had been travelling to all night up a magic beanstalk, and there was a thick crust upon the pavement like oil cake, which, one of the outsides, mad, no doubt, said to another, his keeper, of course, was snow. Taking a confused leave of Anthony and his son, and leaving the luggage of himself and daughters at the office, to be called for afterwards, Mr. Pecksniff, with one of the young ladies under each arm, dived across the street, and then across other streets, and so up the queerest courts, and down the strangest alleys, and under the blindest archways, in a kind of frenzy, now skipping over a kennel, now running for his life from a coach and horses, now thinking he had lost his way, now thinking he had found it, now in a state of the highest confidence, now despondent to the last degree, but always in a great perspiration and flurry, until at length they stopped in a kind of paved yard near the monument. That is to say, Mr. Pecksniff told them so, for as to anything they could see of the monument, or anything else, but the buildings close at hand, they might as well have been playing blindman's buff at Salisbury. Mr. Pecksniff looked about him for a moment, and then knocked at the door of a very dingy edifice, even among the choice collection of dingy edifices at hand, on the front of which was a little oval board like a tea tray, with this inscription: Commercial Boarding House. M. Todgers. Apostrophe, it seemed that M. Todgers was not up yet, for Mr. Pecksniff knocked twice and rang thrice, without making any impression on anything but a dog over the way. At last a chain and some bolts were withdrawn with a rusty noise, as if the weather had made the very fastenings hoarse, and a small boy with a large red head, and no nose to speak of, and a very dirty Wellington boot on his left arm, appeared, who, being surprised, rubbed the nose just mentioned with the back of a shoe brush, and said nothing. Still a bed, my man? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Pecksniff. Still a bed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied the boy. I wish they was still a bed. They're very noisy a bed, all calling for their boots at once. I thought you was the paper, and wondered why you didn't shove yourself through the grating as usual. What do you want? Apostrophe, considering his ears, which were tender, the youth may be said to have preferred this question sternly, and in something of a defiant manner. But Mr. Pecksniff, without taking umbrage at his bearing, put a card in his hand, and bade him take that upstairs, and show them in the meanwhile into a room, where there was a fire. Or if there's one in the eating parlor, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, I can find it myself. Apostrophe, so he led his daughters, without waiting for any further introduction, into a room on the ground floor, where a tablecloth, rather a tight and scanty fit in reference to the table it covered, was already spread for breakfast, displaying a mighty dish of pink boiled beef, an instance of that particular style of loaf which is known to housekeepers as a slack-baked, crummy quartern, a liberal provision of cups and saucers, and the usual appendages. Inside the fender were some half dozen pairs of shoes and boots, of various sizes, just cleaned and turned with the soles upwards to dry, and a pair of short black gaiters, on one of which was chalked in sport, it would appear, by some gentleman who had slipped down for the purpose, pending his toilet, and gone up again Jenkins particular, apostrophe while the other exhibited a sketch in profile, claiming to be the portrait of Jenkins himself. M. Todger's commercial boarding house was a house of that sort which is likely to be dark at any time, but that morning it was especially dark. There was an odd smell in the passage, as if the concentrated essence of all the dinners that had been cooked in the kitchen since the house was built lingered at the top of the kitchen stairs to that hour, and like the black friar in Don Juan, wouldn't be driven away. Apostrophe in particular, there was a sensation of cabbage, as if all the greens that had ever been boiled there were evergreens, and flourished in immortal strength. The parlor was wainscoted, and communicated to strangers a magnetic and instinctive consciousness of rats and mice. The staircase was very gloomy and very broad, with balustrades so thick and heavy that they would have served for a bridge. In a somber corner on the first landing stood a gruff old giant of a clock, with a preposterous coronet of three brass balls on his head, whom few had ever seen, none ever looked in the face, and who seemed to continue his heavy tick for no other reason than to warn heedless people from running into him accidentally. It had not been papered or painted, hadn't Todgers, within the memory of man. It was very black, begrimed, and moldy. And, at the top of the staircase, was an old, disjointed, rickety, ill-favored skylight, patched and mended in all kinds of ways, which looked distrustfully down at everything that passed below, and covered Todgers up, as if it were a sort of human cucumber frame, and only people of a peculiar growth were reared there. Mr. Pecksniff and his fair daughters had not stood warming themselves at the fire 10 minutes, when the sound of feet was heard upon the stairs, and the presiding deity of the establishment came hurrying inches. M. Todgers was a lady, rather a bony and hard-featured lady, with a row of curls in front of her head, shaped like little barrels of beer, and on the top of it something made of net, you couldn't call it a cap exactly, which looked like a black cobweb. She had a little basket on her arm, and in it a bunch of keys, that jingled as she came. In her other hand she bore a flaming tallow candle, which, after surveying Mr. Pecksniff for one instant by its light, she put down upon the table, to the end that she might receive him with the greater cordiality. Mr. Pecksniff! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Todgers. Welcome to London! Who would have thought of such a visit as this, after so dear, dear, so many years? How do you do, Mr. Pecksniff? Apostrophe, as well as ever, and as glad to see you, as ever, apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff made response. Why, you are younger than you used to be. Apostrophe, you are, I am sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers. You're not a bit changed. Apostrophe, what do you say to this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff, stretching out his hand towards the young ladies. Does this make me no older? Apostrophe, not your daughters. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the lady, raising her hands and clasping them. Oh, no, Mr. Pecksniff. Your second, and her bridesmaid. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff smiled complacently, shook his head, and said, my daughters, Mrs. Todgers. Merely my daughters. Apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sighed the good lady, I must believe you, for now I look at them, I think I should have known them anywhere. My dear Miss Pecksniffs, how happy your pa has made me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she hugged them both, and being by this time overpowered by her feelings, or the inclemency of the morning, jerked a little pocket handkerchief out of the little basket, and applied the same to her face. Now, my good madam, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, I know the rules of your establishment, and that you only receive gentlemen boarders. But it occurred to me, when I left home, that perhaps you would give my daughters house room, and make an exception in their favor. Apostrophe, perhaps? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Todgers ecstatically. Perhaps? Apostrophe, I may say then, that I was sure you would, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff. I know that you have a little room of your own, and that they can be comfortable there, without appearing at the general table. Apostrophe, dear girls. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers. I must take that liberty once more. Apostrophe, Mrs. Todgers meant by this, that she must embrace them once more, which she accordingly did with great ardor. But the truth was that the house being full with the exception of one bed, which would now be occupied by Mr. Pecksniff, she wanted time for consideration, and so much time too, for it was a knotty point, how to dispose of them, that even when this second embrace was over, she stood for some moments gazing at the sisters, with affection beaming in one eye, and calculation shining out of the other. I think I know how to arrange it, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers, at length. A sofa bedstead in the little third room which opens from my own parlor. Oh, you dear girls! Apostrophe, thereupon she embraced them once more, observing that she could not decide which was most like their poor mother, which was highly probable, seeing that she had never beheld that lady, but that she rather thought the youngest was. And then she said that as the gentlemen would be down directly, and the ladies were fatigued with traveling, would they step into her room at once? It was on the same floor, being, in fact, the back parlor, and had, as Mrs. Todgers said, the great advantage in London of not being overlooked, as they would see when the fog cleared off. Nor was this a vainglorious boast, for it commanded at a perspective of 2 feet, a brown wall with a black cistern on the top. The sleeping apartment designed for the young ladies was approached from this chamber by a mightily convenient little door, which would only open when fallen against by a strong person. It commanded from a similar point of sight another angle of the wall, and another side of the cistern. Not the damp side, apostrophe said Mrs. Todgers. That is Mr. Jenkins. Apostrophe, in the first of these sanctuaries a fire was speedily kindled by the youthful porter, who, whistling at his work in the absence of Mrs. Todgers, not to mention his sketching figures on his corduroys with burnt firewood, and being afterwards taken by that lady in the fact, was dismissed with a box on his ears. Having prepared breakfast for the young ladies with her own hands, she withdrew to preside in the other room, where the joke at Mr. Jenkins' expense seemed to be proceeding rather noisily. I won't ask you yet, my dears, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, looking in at the door, how you like London. Shall I? Apostrophe, we haven't seen much of it, Pa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mary. Nothing, I hope, apostrophe said Cherry. Both very miserably. Indeed, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, that's true. We have our pleasure, and our business too, before us. All in good time. All in good time. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whether Mr. Pecksniff's business in London was as strictly professional as he had given his new pupil to understand, we shall see. To adopt that worthy man's phraseology, all in good time. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.